Gabriella.
And so come on, Nance.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm going to go ahead and mute because we have more than one.
I'm going to mute.
Please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabekoa Gedula Chimin Fa Kati Serura Alephet Gimel Yutap Sadi Kabel Rinat Amchas Fagvenu Kaharenu No Ra Ufre Shayan Sintet Nun Nagibor Dorshe Yehudha Kivavat Shamrain Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kafshin Barhem Taharem Rahame Sitkatha Tamid Tamlem Betted Resh Tzaditaf Gimel Hasin Kadosh Berov Tuvcha Nael Adata Het Kufbet Tet Nunayan Yahid Geye Lamcha Pene Zochre Kiddushata Yud Gimelamet Pe Zayin Kuf Shavatenu Kabel Ushmatzi Akatenu Yodea Talumot Shin Kuf Bav Tzadi Yud Tav. We have brought the energy of creation into our space. We will now separate the right column energy from the left column energy of this creation, utilizing the 13 attributes of mercy. Adonai Yohewahe, Adonai Yohewahe, El Rahum Bechanun, Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed Be'emet, Notzer Chesed La'alafin, Nosea on Wafesha, Bechata'a V'nakei. And the eighth verse of the Anna Bekoah, we say in a whisper. Today's class is basic class number 6. You can find the handout on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix in the 6th row, the left column. When you click on basic class number 6, Binding by Striking Part 2, you open up to a landing page and scroll down to the bottom where you'll see handouts, links for the handouts, and it's basic class 6, Binding by Striking Part 2 handout. And that is our class for today. We will begin with a L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud Kudsha Berichu Ishkite Bigsilu Urchimu Utkilu Utkilu Urchimu Leakta L'shem Yudhe Bavavhe The Yehuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah Vahino Am Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kananei Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kananeihu. Would anybody like to discuss an incident that they had this week or sometime in their past where they could have used binding by striking or they thought they were using binding by striking and would like to share it with the class so that we can all learn from that? So if you do, please unmute yourself. And I will wait about 30 seconds, and then if nobody does, I will move on with the actual handout for today.
I had 4 different opportunities. I didn't do so good on the first one, but I did by the 4th when I was doing really good.
Well, why don't you share the 4th one then?
Well, people were driving crazy. And this person just pulled out right in front of me, and you just have to stop. And, I mean, you're going down the street, and there they are right in the middle. And I just stopped, and I didn't say a word. I didn't call them idiot like I did the first time. I just waited. And then I went on, and my friend said, I think you passed the test.
So.
I told her, sir.
Go ahead.
I told her on the 2nd and 3rd time, I said, it's going to happen again because I have to get it right.
Well, you've learned that part of it correctly. But let's look at the way you handled this. You stopped. You had the reaction that you wanted to call the person a name. And you stopped that reaction, correct?
Right. Yes.
Okay. What's the second phase that we are supposed to do? We're supposed to ask our higher self,
yes,
why did this happen? And you had some of the answer when you had the conversation with your friend. Some of the answer is it happened because I didn't get it right yet. But from the question from your higher self would be, I put you in this situation so that you would learn to control your words. Is that a correct answer to your question of why this happened to you?
Yes, not only my words, but my temper.
I
was
angry.
Yeah.
But that's not the, when your higher self gives you that answer, it's a lie. There's a deeper reason. Yes, it is your temper. But why do you get angry? Why does your temper flare up? And that's a question you can ask your higher self as soon as you get the thought or the answer to your first question. Your first question is, why did this happen to me? The first answer is always a lie. But it has an element of truth. Because every lie has an element of truth. If you look at the word sheker, which is lie in Hebrew, it's spelled shin kuf resh. The shin is a mother letter. It's passion, it's fire, it's strong energy. But the next two letters spell the word cold. And what is cold? Cold is logical analysis that has no depth and no emotion to it. So what is this lie that your higher self told you? I put you in this situation so you would learn to control your anger. And there's an element of truth there. But what's the coldness of it? The coldness is you don't go further into the question. You accept the question at face value. Instead of asking the next question, why do I get angry? Now, what would your higher self answer you there?
Probably because I'm impatient.
Okay. So you're impatient. So that your higher self puts you into a situation where you would learn patience. Is that a sufficiently deep answer to you, to what you want to know? And you can say yes. That's okay. It can be that's all that you want to go to at that moment. That's all you have time to go to at that moment. But there's always a deeper answer. It's you never get to the bottom answer. Never. I'm working on something that is 18 years old in my own life. I'm still not at the bottom answer. The point I'm trying to get across is it's okay to say, all right, I need to learn patience. But then the question should be, how do I learn patience? Or the question could be, why am I impatient? If I ask the question, why are you impatient, do you have an answer?
Because I'm a perfectionist, and if it doesn't come out perfect, I'm not happy.
And is that an answer that you would accept? I don't mean to put you on the spot. I'm trying to help other people understand the process.
Right. I think all I would say at that point is that's how I am right now, or where I am right now.
Okay. But then the question would be, do you want to change?
Yes, obviously.
Then the question is, how can you change? And I'll answer that for you if you want me to.
Please.
One of the 72 names is to help you overcome impatience. If you take the letters of your name in Hebrew and intertwine it with that 72-letter name, you're bringing the energy of patience into your soul. And over time, if you do that daily, if you do that quick meditation of looking at those 7 or 8 letters, you will bring patience into your life, because you're replacing impatience, which is a negative habit, with a positive habit of that meditation. You're bringing the energy of asking for God's help to overcome your impatience.
That makes sense.
Now, that's the end of phase two, section two of these 4 steps. Actually, it's the end of the third section. The first section is to pause, stop the reaction. The second step is to inquire as to why it happened. And the third step is to receive all of these answers. And you go deeper, as deep as you wish to go. And the fourth step is to do something. So in your case, you said what you did was to stay and wait patiently.
Right.
But I doubt if it was truly patience. Was a little bit of fuming under your breath.
The second and third times, I was definitely not very patient. But by the fourth time, I felt like I had it pretty good.
Very good. I'm not criticizing you for that. I'm trying to explain. The point of the fourth thing is to do something. And it can be exactly the same thing as you wanted in the first, as your first reaction. But it can also be something different, as you did with this fourth time. You waited patiently. Now, that seems like a very simple action. But it's a positive action that you threw out into the universe. And the boomerang law says, positive, proactive actions come back to you with positive, proactive results, effects. And you may never know how the fact that you stopped patiently comes back to you in a positive action. You may never know the cause. You never made the link. You may never make the linkage between cause and effect. But it's there. And over time, as you do this more and more, you will begin to make those linkages and be able to perceive how this coming back was a result of my proactive action. Because what you did was move into a different cassette, a different movie. So thank you for sharing. And I'm sure that the people who listen to this class and this recording will find your effort beneficial. Because what it does is you have to expose yourself, which means your ego has to take criticism, constructive criticism, criticism with love. But still, your ego feels pain. And that's a good thing. Unless there are other questions from other people, I will begin the class and go forward now with the hand up. Basic class 6 is part 2. So we're still talking about binding by striking, which we've been talking about for 3 weeks. And I have finally remembered the Hebrew words for binding by striking. Zivug, the haka'ah. Zivug, the haka'ah. Zivug is sexual intercourse, but it's really binding. It's bringing together two separate things, bringing them together. But the haka'ah is by striking. How do you make a campfire when you're a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout? You learn to take two rocks or two flints, strike them together, and you create light, you create fire. That's what we're doing with binding by striking. Zibug de haka'ah. By striking, by bringing into question, we create light, just like the electric light bulb does, just like the electric power station. I'll begin to read. Last week, we taught you the principles of binding by striking, and we expounded on it just as part of this early class, the early part of this class. This week, we will teach you the shortcuts to what to do when you are not sure what to do or how to do it. I am presenting here an essay that relates modern science to the teachings of the Torah. Superdeterminism and free will. This is an essay written by a blogger who shares his blog with three other people. The tagline of our blog is a Mishnah from the Pirkei Avot, the Ethics of the Fathers, a section of the Talmud. Everything is foreseen, but free will is granted. The Halakha of Yomit, a book that is written on the Halakha, he quotes on this. The Rambam, Rabbi Moses, the Rambam, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, explains this to mean that everything is foreseen by Hashem. Who can foresee everything until the end of all the generations? The Tana, which is the Halakha Yomit, was what he wrote. The Tana then proceeds to teach us that one should not think that since Hashem already knows whatever is bound to happen, an individual has no free choice. This is truly not the case. Rather, a man has free choice to do whatever he pleases. Rashi explains likewise in his commentary on the Masechet Nidah, another section of the Talmud, where he writes, all of an individual's happenings and occurrences are the result of a heavenly decree besides the fear of heaven, which is mandated by the individual's own free choice. It sounds mystical and spooky, or at least one of those very high-level religious statements that we can generalize and ignore, God forbid. Now along comes Scientific American, the magazine, and demonstrates that modern quantum physics agrees. Quantum physics, superdeterminism, an article in the Scientific American, I'm not sure of the specifics, but I'm sure it can be looked up online. It's a weird and downright disturbing idea. The sober way to put it is that physicists are never able to conduct a fully controlled experiment, since the experimental setup they choose is not strictly independent of the process that created the particles. Even if the experimentalists, conveniently, conventionally named Alice and Bob, live on Earth, and the particles come from quasars billions of light years away. They share a common past in the very early universe. Their subtle interdependence creates a selection bias, misleading the physicists into thinking that no deeper level of physics could explain the particle coordination, when in fact it could. There was a Big Bang, according to modern physics theory, and according to also to Kabbalah, using a different language called, where in Hebrew it's called Tzimtzum. The Big Bang happened, and 600 light years away from Earth, a quasar, a particle that is smaller than an atom, is sitting out there or flying further out there, and for some reason, it gets bounced around and it comes running back towards the Earth. Not back to where the start of the Big Bang was, but towards Earth. Why did it get banged around to come back to Earth? That's the relationship that the scientists don't want to look into. The Kabbalah explains why, but this class is not designed to go into that. And I'm not sure I could do it justice anyway. The dramatic version is that free will is an illusion. Worse, actually. Even regular determinism without the super subverts our sense of free will. Through the laws of physics, you can trace every choice you make to the arrangement of matter at the dawn of time. Superdeterminism adds a twist of the knife. Not only is everything you do preordained, the universe reaches into your brain and stops you from doing an experiment that would reveal its true nature. The universe is not just set up in advance. It is set up in advance to fool you. As a conspiracy theory, this leaves Roswell and the priority of Zion in the dust. That said, one person's conspiracy is another person's law of physics. Lots of things in the world seem conspiratorial at first glance, but are the result of well-established principles. The fact that the moon spins on its axis at exactly the same rate it orbits Earth, thereby keeping the same face to us, or nearly so, is not the work of a cabal, but of laws such as the conservation of angular momentum. In the opening panel discussion of the conference, Professor Hooft speculated that some new law of physics might harmonize particles' properties with humans' measurement choices. What looks like a conspiracy today may be due to a conservation law we don't know about today. It's incredible until you find its mathematical necessity. It is a deep, detailed, as yet unproven, and maybe unable to be proven before Mashiach comes, theory that says everything is foreseen, but free will is granted. What did we learn last week? And again this morning, we learned the four steps that creates miracles in our lives. The four steps of Zivug DeHaka'ah, binding by striking. Let's review what they are. One is to stop your selfish reaction. Your reaction is always selfish. Two, have an internal conversation as to what is the motivation behind your reaction. Three, transform your selfish consciousness to a sharing consciousness. Four, do an action, any action, It can be the same action as what your reaction was going to be, or something else entirely. The action you do will have a sharing consciousness. It's easy to understand binding by striking in the observation of a mother trying to control the tantrum of a two-year-old in the middle of the aisle in Walmart's. We don't know what the mother is thinking, but we see the mother give a pachka, a little hit, to the bottom of the child. Was it a sharing action or was it a selfish action? It depends on what was the consciousness of the mother. The mother could have been, oh my God, they think that I'm a horrible mother. I've got to stop this child. These people are judging me and I can't handle that. And we all know times in our lives, not in the specifics of this child, but we've had incidents in our life where we think like that. That's a selfish reaction. Or the mother could be, having gone through Zivug Dahaka'a, and she changed, oh my God, I can't be that selfish. I have to control this child because he has to learn to live in a society. And throwing a tantrum in the middle of Walmart might be acceptable for a two-year-old for a minute, but it's certainly not going to be acceptable for a 20-year-old doing the same thing. I have to train the child. That's a sharing consciousness. The mother is not concerned about what other people are thinking. She's concerned about her child's future. Sharing an experience from this week, Rules for Life. The tool of binding by striking has specific corollaries that apply to different times and life patterns within our lives. So let's look at these rules and see when to apply them. Hashem is one and unified, and thus our lives are one and unified. Yet we perceive things separated, and thus we can see our lives as three different patterns, and probably many more different patterns. Everything is turning up roses. Everything we touch turns to gold. Two, our lives could be running a different pattern. Everything we touch is turning to that four-letter word that is one of our body functions. It is not the opposite of gold, because gold, but the opposite of food that tastes good. It's a waste product, comes out of our bodies, in case you didn't know what I was referring to. The third alternative, it's a middle period where some things go right and some things don't. We've all had times, and hopefully we've all had times, where everything we touched went well. Everything was working. We were, what is the phrase, pumping on all pistons. And there are other times when no matter what we do, it turns out wrong. That usually applies to our relationships to our teenage children. When you are in the middle period of your life, the tool of binding by striking is the best tool available to you. Please try it and use it. It will prove itself to you. Remember, it is a lifetime learning process. Learning how to use it and learning about yourself. I just had a call come in, so I want to make sure that we're... We are still connected. Binding by striking is a tool that works because it goes against your human nature. I want you to think about that statement. Binding by striking takes you out of your comfort zone. Why? Because you're not doing what your reactive nature is telling you to do. You've stopped it, and that's not comfortable. When you want to say the bad word towards the driver in front of you, as we had that discussion this morning, it's not comfortable to not say it. Swallowing words is not easy. Now, how do you take the principle of going against your nature when things are running smoothly in your life? Human nature is to take credit for things going smoothly. Your business is doing well. Who caused that? Obviously, your ideas and implementation of those ideas is what you think. Your family life is running smoothly. How come they are all so happy these days? Obviously, you are doing something right and making them happy. Is either of these statements true? Is this the true method of why the world is running smoothly? Remember, everything has a spiritual cause. What is the spiritual cause of everything running smoothly? This kind of period in your life is given as an opportunity that proves that you are in control of your natural human responses. The natural human response is to congratulate yourself on doing such a good job, to really be proud of yourself and the good job that you are doing. Is that true? It's a natural human response. It's a natural human reaction. But you're going to find out it's selfish. I am accused many times in these discussions of Zivugda Ata'a of not being human. And I will tell you very clearly, I am very human. And I fall into that trap of thinking, I did this. But we will learn that the I is not me. The simple rule to follow when you find yourself in a period where everything is working well is to remember that you are doing nothing. And if you're doing nothing, it's happening for another reason. And that other reason is the Creator is giving you a benefit. So appreciate the Creator for giving you a benefit. But what if you're not a theist? As I watched a movie the other day that used that term. If you're not a theist, someone who knows God exists, what if you're an agnostic? You're not sure. What if you're an atheist? You don't think he exists, or she exists, or it exists. Can you still be appreciative to the universe? Can you still recognize that your human reaction is not the cause of why things are running smoothly? Because if that were true, your human reactions would always be right. Well, the atheist and the agnostic would say, wait a second, I can't always be right. I make mistakes. I'm human. But you can appreciate that it's not you that's making this happen. sometimes you can even appreciate that it's not you that's making this wonderful period in your life happen, but it's somebody else. It's your wife or husband. It's your children behaving well. And it has nothing to do with you being so important and such a central part of their lives. The economy is running smoothly. Business is absolutely wonderful. And then the pandemic hits and everybody has to stay home. Whose fault is that? Who is responsible for that? We can blame China. We can even blame the virus. But will we accept our responsibility? That's the question that each one has to answer for themselves. If you accept your responsibility, then you realize it's not you. It's something outside of you, and you want to be appreciative to that force that's outside of you. Don't call it God. Don't call it Hashem. Don't call it the Creator. It's a force outside of you. It's another person outside of you. Yes, we all know that's not true. There's nothing outside of you. Because we're all part of one vessel, the endless vessel. But still, being appreciative is a sharing consciousness. And that's what we need to strive to do. I'm continuing to read. When you think that something outside of you, this wonderful period in your life will continue to manifest. That's the promise that the Torah gives us. Be appreciative, it will continue. When you forget to be appreciative, and we all do, that's what brings it to an end. When you forget to remember to thank something outside of yourself, which in this handout we're calling the Creator, in the time frame that the Creator or this has given you, everything being wonderful, everything running smoothly will change back to the up and down cycle of something called the tree of knowledge, good and evil. And a good and evil just means sometimes it goes up and sometimes it goes up, down. When you are in a pattern of everything going wrong, what do you think is the spiritual cause of that kind of period? It is a test to reduce your ego. This kind of period is best exampled by the idea of a toothache or a headache. When people of our generation get a headache, they reach for a temporary solution, a solution like aspirin or Excedrin or Bufferin or the new migraine medicines. These solutions do not want to be permanent. They don't promise to be permanent. In fact, take one and you'll find out your headache will come back. I guarantee it. I don't guarantee it. The Torah guarantees it. If you take an Excedrin or a Bufferin or an aspirin or a medicine that causes the migraines to stop, all of these pains will come back. The Kabbalists teach us that any form of pain, suffering, or chaos is not the way the world is meant to work, and that we can have a desire and a solution that is permanent. That simple permanent solution is to ask for more headaches right now. Sounds crazy. Feels crazy. It's absolutely absurd. Doesn't fit any kind of logic. You're in pain, ask for more pain. The truth is you will receive more headache pain when you ask for it. And you will receive it right now. That headache will intensify. It will get worse, right up to the maximum pain that you can take. And then it will go away and never come back. Sometimes it takes a few experiences, depending on the amount of pain that one needs to cleanse, their overall need for a headache. As an example, and this is just putting numbers together, if I can have a 10 on the pain scale, that's what I can handle with a headache. But I have earned 30, the pain of 30, the category of 30 as a pain scale that I need to cleanse from my headache. But I can only handle 10 at a time. So when I ask for more pain, I'm going to get that 10, but not 11, not 12. But there will come a time when I will get some more headache pain. And if I ask again for more pain, it'll get run up to 10. So now I've cleansed 20 of the 30. And it'll happen a third time. Rarely has someone been given so much time to create so much need for cleansing pain that it takes more than three times. Rarely. It does happen, but very rarely. Now that you are through laughing about this totally absurd tool that works, just try it. And I'm not going to say, what do you have to lose? I'm going to say, just try it. What if you understand the way the world works, which I'm going to continue to read this paragraph, the reason it works is the human being will do anything to relieve pain. Not the human being, the human body will do anything to relieve pain. When you ask for more pain, you are going against your nature. When you go against your nature, you are doing zivu haka, binding by striking. When you go against your nature by saying thank you during the stage one period, the period everything going smoothly, you are using zivu haka, binding by striking. Going against your nature is the solution to everything. Any problem you have, any test you experience, any part of your life, all you have to do is go against your nature. It's very simple. It's not easy. Are there any questions? Please try it. Next week, we move on to the final effect, the final tool associated with Zivug Dahaka'a, and that's called Teshuvah. Are there any questions? Our class is over except for questions. While you're unmuting, I will tell you that we have two more classes today. One's at 4:30, it's a deep Zohar class. One's at 7 p.m., which is an essay by the Ari And our class tomorrow at 11 a.m. is to continue our study in the book of Joshua. Are there any questions? Any comments? Any thoughts? Shalom Gadol to all. I hope you have a beautiful afternoon and evening. I will see you in one of these next three classes. Shalom.
Shalom.
Thank you.
Thank you.